This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
One. Te amo. Te amo. We love you. Now get off our island. The Martha's Vineyard story and why it is everything. Two. You're not a private company if you're acting at the behest of the United States government. Three, a game-winning drive from Cooper Rush. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Monday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review, and share this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You can also watch this podcast on Rumble or YouTube. Jerry Jones has famously said, you have to enjoy your wins. What's the point if you only suffer through the losses? You have to enjoy your wins. This was a weekend of wins. It was a weekend of wins in the household of Cain. I had one son have a nice weekend of victories and strong performances. Most importantly, strong performances on the soccer field. Formally formalized his date to homecoming, and he racked up a few wins. Then on Saturday night, my Texas Longhorns come back from down just before the half to UTSA and win strong and cover. Do the Texas Longhorns. I had a strong showing in racquetball this weekend, winning 3-1. Just a natural athlete, one might say. No lessons, just dominant on the racquetball court. A weekend of wins. And then, to cap it all off, I get a game-winning drive from Cooper Rush for a win by the Dallas Cowboys. Can't just suffer through the losses. You have to enjoy the wins. I feel the weekends where it's primarily L's. I'm going to go ahead and enjoy the weekends with a few W's. But we get started today with story number one. I take you to the streets of Edgartown, Massachusetts. Tony, upscale neighborhood, on the island of Martha's Vineyard, where a handful of buses are lined up, surrounded by a crowd. The crowd resembles young ladies at a boy band concert. There's tears. There's chasing the buses down the street out of town. There's very fashionable women with just the right hat on, giving the double hand wave. And there are 60-year-old women yelling, "Te amo, te amo," as the rich, elite, liberal denizens of Martha's Vineyard eject illegal immigrants off the island, like an episode of Survivor, within 44 hours of their arrival. This story and this moment are absolutely everything. They tell us everything, not just about the issue of illegal immigration, but of the divide within our society, of the nature of our politics, of the attitude of our people. I'm telling you, this story is about fake virtue, virtue signaling. It's about racism. It's about not having to live with your policies. It's about someone else's problem as long as that someone else is far away. It is about NIMBY, not in my backyard. And it is about elitism. This story, Martha's Vineyard, is everything. Let us start with the Nobel Prize winning acts of kindness on Martha's Vineyard for 44 hours. Ron DeSantis, as you well know at this point, shipped 48 illegal immigrants, the majority of whom were from Venezuela, from Texas through the panhandle of Florida on a private flight to Martha's Vineyard. These 48 individuals were, in the estimation of the mainstream media and the locals there in Martha's Vineyard, received with compassion, received with empathy, received with a warm welcome. A couple of cots at the local church, a warm bowl of soup. Someone even ventured to go down to the Venezuelan restaurant because, of course, Martha's Vineyard has a Venezuelan restaurant, and get them some familiar empanadas, to get them some local fare. Everyone broke into chants of their few knowledgeable Spanish phrases, te amo, te amo. And then, sadly, a few injuries were suffered as people on Martha's Vineyard broke their arms, patting themselves on the back. I'm telling you, they have said, and people have bought, and the mainstream media has echoed, that Ron DeSantis' evil plot to expose the hypocrisies of Martha's Vineyard were spoiled, blown up in his face by the kindness of these elite island-dwelling, part-time residents, Northeasterners. I'm telling you, it is absolutely stunning. In that 44 hours that 48 Venezuelan illegal immigrants lived in the Tony Island of Martha's Vineyard, the local government declared a state of emergency. The governor called in the National Guard. The locals said, we'd love to help, but we just don't have the space. When a reporter said, did you realize that Martha's Vineyard has the highest percentage of available housing in the United States of America? You see, it is a summer vacation locale. 55% of the homes on Martha's Vineyard remain empty in the off season from Labor Day to Memorial Day. 55% of the homes on that island sit empty, and most of those homes sit with 8 to 10 bedrooms, not unlike the mansion of former President Barack Obama. These 48 illegal immigrants probably could have wintered on Martha's Vineyard in the home of Barack Obama. But no, it's just not built. Housing supply is too tight. A burger costs $26. Just can't swing it here on Martha's Vineyard. No, we're going to have to ship you out. Call the National Guard. Te amo. I'm telling you, it couldn't be a parody. If Saturday Night Live had a set of brass ones, or even some eggshell thick spherical objects, then they would have the temerity to make this into comedy. Their only challenge being, how do you surpass reality? These residents tolerated the presence of illegal immigrants for less than 2 days, and in the process congratulated themselves for their compassion. They shipped them off, the illegal aliens, with chants of Te Amo. In the meantime, for what it's worth, they raised on GoFundMe $43,000. Those $43,000, by the way, went to improving the lives of those illegal immigrants by absolutely nada. Zero. Those $43,000 were distributed, not one red penny to the Venezuelans. No. They're going to be put in a rainy day fund. Of course, in a, sure, high interest bearing financial vehicle, but for a rainy day fund, these migrants are being taken care of. The National Guard's taking them to Cape Cod. It is absolutely amazing and revealing in every way about this issue that they could only tolerate the presence for 44 hours and yet congratulate themselves for those 44 hours. You know, in the 1990s, for most of you listening, you might remember that we went through more obvious trends and fads, or rather trends and fads that lasted a bit longer than just a few days. We had fads that lasted weeks. You remember the fads. Remember the Coca-Cola shirts that everybody had to have? Beanie Babies, Cabbage Patch Kids in the 80s, Pog discs. What were those, cardboard discs? You had to have it. I don't know why you had to have it. One of the trends, though, that took off in the 1990s had a more lasting message. That was the WWJD bracelet. What would Jesus do? People brought these bracelets long before the Livestong bracelet and tried to live up to the mantra of what would Jesus do? over time, that message, that uplifting sentiment, that aspiration was turned into a punchline by many on the left. In fact, there's a meme going around right now, Republican Jesus, saying Jesus would have said, yes, you can come to America, but you got to follow the process, mocking Republican policies while at the same time maintaining Christian virtue. They have nothing to say for the fact that Jesus said, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, following government policy, or that Jesus turned over the tables of the money changers, the frauds within financing government. But they used what would Jesus do, not just as a punchline, but as a tool to try to bludgeon their political opponents. Saul Alinsky, by the way, famously wrote Rules for Radicals. In it, he literally gives a guidebook for how you can win policy debates. One of those points in his 12 Rules for Radicals would be rule number 4. Make the enemy live up to its own rules. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. Always ask, what would Jesus do? Many in that Tony liberal elite island of Martha's Vineyard wielded that exact concept in claiming a false victory. The victory was as shallow as a hashtag on Twitter. The victory was as shallow as virtue signaling on social media, because, of course, there was no real compassion. There was only the moral preening, the pose in front of the mirror, that is to take a cold drink out to your yard man in the middle of a hot day. It made you feel better and maybe provided him some momentary source of relief, but didn't make you any better than anyone else. That was accommodating Venezuelan illegal immigrants for 44 hours on your island while wishing them luck and shipping them onto buses to leave the island within 2 days. But they asked you, what's wrong with you? What would Jesus do? Surely Jesus would not live like those on Martha's Vineyard. Instead, what they see in their opponents is Pontius Pilate, or what they project onto their opponents is Lucifer. Ron DeSantis has literally been called Ron DeSatan, and he's been accused of cruelty, human trafficking, and kidnapping in the case of these illegal immigrants on Venezuela's ship to Martha's Vineyard. For example, here is somewhat of what has been said. He's been accused of lying to these migrants, telling them they'd go somewhere else while arriving on Martha's Vineyard. This weekend on Fox and Friends, we had the Lieutenant Governor of Florida, Jeanette Nunez, on the program. She said that is absolutely and categorically false. In fact, they were told exactly where they were going. It sounded pretty nice to everybody. And why wouldn't it? It's a rich island on the Northeast. The rich and famous live there. It's very, very cushy. And oh, by the way, compared to Brownsville, you're going to like the climate. Trust me. The locals do, from Memorial Day to Labor Day. They were given a map. They were told exactly where they would be going. It was described as a cartoonish map, but it wasn't a lie. They knew exactly what they were going to do and where they would arrive. Martha's Vineyard. What more? If it's kidnapping and human trafficking, what is it then when the Democratic mayor of El Paso has sent dozens of buses to Chicago and New York and Washington, D.C., the Democratic mayor of Chicago? For that matter, so is the Republican governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, but none of the attention is focused on either of those politicians. It's only focused on Ron DeSantis. Why? Well, therein lies the answer for the reason for the outrage, because it's political. Because outside of Donald Trump, he is the primary candidate for the Republican nomination for president. So twist and spin, project and defame, and you can take down your primary political opponent. What more, it's not just the Democratic mayor of El Paso nor the Republican governor of Texas who have flown illegal immigrants around this country. Joe Biden, the Democrat president of the United States of America, has done so for 12 months. He's flown illegal immigrants to upstate New York. Now, you may not know because it's not covered in the mainstream media, and you may not know because it's done under the cover of night. It's not done for publicity, it's done instead to be hidden from you. Does that change whether or not it's human trafficking and cruelty, whether or not it's kidnapping? Oh, I doubt it. I doubt it would change the actual substance, but this isn't about substance. It's about politics. Let's also address the issue of how cruel of an act this was. Ron DeSantis's shipment to Martha's Vineyard. To be clear, Griff Jenkins on the Fox News Channel interviewed many of these migrants. They've been through the same trip that so many illegal immigrants have. They've traveled through South America, up through Central America, often ridden the beast, the train, where people fall off, lose limbs, they die. They've traveled through the jungle of central Mexico. They've traveled through the desert of northern Mexico. They've risked rape, experienced rape. They've risked death at the hands of the cartel. They've risked murder. They've risked child abuse. They've risked child trafficking. They have, to the tune of some 750 illegal immigrants in the past year, died along this trail. This is all in search of the lure that is the open border of the southern border of the United States of America. They'll tell you exactly why they're coming if you take the time to ask and then to listen, because they believe they will be allowed to stay. Why would they believe that? Because people like Joe Biden saying illegal immigration is our strength. I guess it wasn't a strength for Martha's Vineyard. But it's hard to look at that entire trip and say, you know what the cruel part was? The cruel part was when Ron DeSantis put them on a private jet and shipped them to Martha's Vineyard. That is what's truly cruel. Not the beast, not the train, not dismemberment, not rape, not death, but landing in the part-time island resident of the rich and famous of the Northeast. That is what's cruel. This is beyond parody. This is beyond a joke. And by the way, it's not beyond the accusations, well-deserved accusations, of racism. You know, it seems to me that many of the residents of Martha's Vineyard, as they said goodbye, te amo, to the illegal immigrants, were fine when this remained a problem far away, when it was their policies affecting border towns like Brownsville, border towns like El Paso, border towns like Del Rio. You know, in the old days, Marie Antoinette said, amidst starvation in the streets of Paris, let them eat cake. Today, the residents of Martha's Vineyard say, let them live in El Paso. We just can't do it here in Martha's Vineyard. In other words, let them live in those middle class towns in Texas. Let them live in those primarily brown and Latino towns of southern Texas. You see, the only Latinos apparently allowed are those who can open a Venezuelan restaurant or mow the lawns of people like Barack Obama. You can't live there. Why? We don't have the facilities, you know? It's a housing shortage. Everything's expensive. You wouldn't want to live here. What does that say to El Paso? What does that say to Brownsville? You're a dump. Don't worry. You'll survive. Does nobody but Martha's Vineyard want their home to be nice? Does nobody but Martha's Vineyard not want their resources strained? Are only the people of Martha's Vineyard the one who deserve being preserved? Tucker Carlson gave an incredible monologue last night. The lesson in all of this isn't truly that illegal immigrants should be allowed to populate the streets or the wealthy homes of Martha's Vineyard, but that Martha's Vineyard's beauty and even its status should be able to be maintained. But so should the middle class safety and beauty of El Paso. Why is it okay to ruin some towns with illegality and vagrancy, tax jobs, lower wages, strain resources, but not others? Is it racism? Is it because Brownsville, Del Rio, and El Paso are 80 to 90% Latino, 80 to 90% brown? You'll feel more at home there, said the residents. The elite residents of Martha's Vineyard. Te amo there as well. It's blatant racism. It's blatant NIMBY. Not in my backyard. As long as this problem exists far away, I'm actually happy to vote for it. I'm actually happy to incentivize it. This is the effect of their vote. This is the effect of the politicians they wield as armbands of virtue. But as long as that effect is far away, it remains a virtue. If it comes home like a chicken to roost, it's intolerable. It's intolerable. Te amo. You must go. It is also obviously sheer and utter elitism. It is simply the idea that some people are better than others. and those that are better should never have to live like others. Comedian Dave Smith had a wonderful tweet thread on this that I wanted to share with you. It's fascinating. He said, "The Martha's Vineyard thing might be the best and clearest example of what so many of us have been talking about for years. The progressive elite advocate for policies they never have to suffer the consequences of, and the one time they do, it ends quickly. They are against building a wall, but they live in gated communities or islands. They are for gun control, but they have armed security. They destroy public education, but send their kids to elite private schools. They support mask mandates, but only their servants wear them at their parties. There are too many examples like this to list off, and it's not just the ones they advocate for these policies, but those that they demonize in the most vicious ways who dare oppose these policies. This is why the elites are so rightfully hated in our society." He is absolutely right. The whole point of this issue is that no one should have to deal with what Martha's Vineyard was unwilling to deal. Vice President Kamala Harris somehow looked at this incident and called the actions of Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis a dereliction of duty. That is the point. It's a dereliction of duty, and the duty lies with the federal government, at least for now. Let's always seek to solve our problems. This is a political stunt intended to highlight an issue. Is there not a way to actually solve the issue? Well, this weekend on Fox and Friends, we hosted Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, and we pressed him because the Lieutenant Governor, Republican of Texas, deserves to be pressed. Why hasn't he taken over this duty? It's true that immigration exists within the realm of the federal government, but many have pointed out when you are faced with such a crisis, 2 million migrant encounters in this fiscal year. That's known encounters in this fiscal year. When you're dealing with that type of issue, you have to sometimes set aside or at least look between the lines to take on duty. Ken Cuccinelli here on the Will Cain podcast and Russ Vaught, among others, have laid out what I'm talking about. Governors of states have the constitutional power to declare an invasion. They did not abrogate their powers to the federal government to protect themselves from acts of war. This is not an immigration issue. This is now framed as an invasion. In fact, Cuccinelli has said these politicians in places like Texas should declare an invasion, and therefore they would have the power to not ask illegal immigrants voluntarily to travel across straight lines, state lines to Martha's Vineyard, but to deport illegal immigrants directly to Mexico or the country of their origin. Now, easier said than done. If Texas or Arizona or even Florida, because you don't have to be a border state, declared an invasion and began the process of removing illegal immigrants, you would have several showdowns. You would have a showdown possibly with federal law enforcement and local law enforcement. You could potentially have DPS and Border Patrol, Texas Department of Public Safety, and Federal Border Patrol staring at each other over custody of an illegal immigrant. You could have local law enforcement, Texas Rangers, charged with kidnapping. You could have a constitutional showdown in the Supreme Court as to whether or not these states actually have the power that people are asking them to exert. But you would also have somebody, for once, not performing a dereliction of duty. This isn't a partisan issue. This is an American issue. The point is nobody, when I say it's not a partisan issue, nobody is protected from criticism and letting this problem metastasize. Dan Patrick said they're going to work on a bill to help Texas be empowered to deal with this problem independently. You've had over a year. You don't need three more months. We're not asking you to write it on the weekend on Fox and Friends. We're asking you to deal with the problem. We're asking you to do your duty. I don't care if you have an R or if you have a D by your name. If the people of Martha's Vineyard think it's a problem, it's a problem. And if the people of Martha's Vineyard can deport them from their island, surely the United States of America can import them from our country. This is not about dehumanizing anyone. It's not about cruelty. It's not about kidnapping. It's not about human trafficking. It's not about a lack of empathy. This act, Ron DeSantis's and Greg Abbott's act, has revealed the emptiness of that virtue, of that faux compassion. You have no compassion. You have 12 hours of bowls of soup and two nights of cots. That's the extent of your empathy. It's an inch deep and a mile wide. You move on to the next issue that trends, and you'll once again show your deep compassion. You'll once again project your virtue. It's a fraud. You're a fraud. I'm not concerned about that. What I'm looking for are individuals willing to deal with this issue, because what the people of Martha's Vineyard realized is this is not a problem that only exists far away, but one that is intolerable at home. And all I'm telling you is the people of Brownsville deserve that same right. The people of America deserve that same right. We are a country, in Barack Obama's words, built upon immigration. We are not a country built upon illegal immigration. It is not empathetic to have a tragedy of the commons. You know what a tragedy of the commons is? It's a term in law where if there is no law, it's complete chaos, and anybody has access to all resources, a depletion of resources for all. Everyone suffers. The United States of America, just as a sheer number in public resources, can't take in every one of the world's poor and destitute, whoever has the ability to walk across our southern border. We have limited resources, and we have a legal process for making it so that we can continue with our arms open. What more, and in a conversation we need to have more here on the Will Cain podcast, we have an established culture. It is true. We have an American culture, an American identity. That has to be factored in, and the preservation of our way of life. You can't simply open your doors wide open, no regulation, to the world and expect to maintain the culture, yes, the culture that has made you the preeminent nation on the earth. People from Mexico will bring the culture of Mexico, and we should take the best of that. That's not xenophobic. That's certainly not racist. That's the world. Everyone is allowed to have pride in their culture except apparently America. And in preserving that culture, which, by the way, is the culture that put a man on the moon, in preserving that culture, we should, and by the way, birth the Dallas Cowboys, put a man on the moon, birth the Dallas Cowboys, tomato, tomato, it's debatable, higher achievement. But in preserving that culture, we factor in exactly what it means, exactly the difference between legal immigration, true empathy, true compassion, and illegal immigration. You cannot treat this issue like we have treated trans women in sports, where you extend empathy to the man dressed up in a women's swimsuit, but deprive all of the women swimmers who've competed and trained their entire life of a fair competition. You have empathy for one and no compassion for the many. Same thing with illegal immigration. You can't have empathy for the few and no compassion for the nation. And you don't anyway. That's what's been exposed. You don't have compassion. You don't have empathy. You have 44 hours of soup and cots. And then, it's te amo, double hand wave, load up on the buses. Best of luck in Del Rio.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain podcast.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Story number two. In what I have said has been and should be the biggest story in the United States of America, Facebook has appeared before Congress and the testimony in the cross-examination of Missouri Senator Josh Hawley and admitted that they colluded with the federal government in abridging the First Amendment and censoring citizens of the United States of America. We are going to deep dive on this later this week because we should. But the details at this point, I trust you know. The CDC, the NIH, the Biden administration, the White House colluded with Facebook to censor Americans, to take down posts. We've seen the emails. Hey, can you take down this account? We don't like it. Yep, on it. Within 46 seconds. a list of terms, a list of people that should be censored. Facebook, yep, on it. At the behest of the Biden administration. Josh Hawley pressed a man named Chris Cox from Facebook about this. He said, of course, speech is constitutionally protected by the First Amendment of the United States. Private companies are not subject to the First Amendment. But the United States government is. If there is no incitement to violence, and there wasn't, if there is no call to violence, and there wasn't, and it's a coordinated campaign with a pattern and practice, as Hawley established with Cox of Facebook, and there was a pattern and practice, if it was the policy of Facebook to accommodate these government bureaucrats' wishes for silence, and it was, then it is a violation of the First Amendment. I shared that video, 7 minutes of cross-examination on social media. And I want to share with you some of the responses because it shows, I don't know how widespread, but a seemingly widespread misunderstanding or willful ignorance of exactly the dynamics at play. So many people are saying, Facebook is a private company. Read their terms of service. They're not required to platform your speech. And of course, that's true. Facebook is a private company. Their terms of service absolutely allow them to delete any post they so choose. But it's interesting that those people making that argument, have they always been so faithful to the idea of private enterprise, free to conduct a business as they so choose? I'm going to suspect that many of those same people, hashtag misinformation, hashtag get vaxxed, were also hashtagged I kneel with Kaepernick in 2016. See, Kaepernick, working for a private company, the NFL, was told you can't politic on the job. You can't kneel during the national anthem on the job. You can have free speech outside your workplace all that you would like. But inside our workplace, our private company, the NFL, you cannot do so. But I don't think those people were advocating for the freedom of private enterprise, for the freedom of the NFL at that time. No, I suspect they were not. In fact, I would suspect they're probably making some free speech First Amendment claims when it came to Kaepernick. What more? I'm almost even more certain that they were on the side of the government and a gay couple enforcing a Christian bakery, a private enterprise, to bake a gay wedding cake. Remember that case from New Mexico. Christian bakery says, no, thank you. We politely decline to accept your business, to a gay couple asking for a cake to be baked for their wedding. By the way, that gay couple, for what it's worth, knew the policies of that Christian bakery. They could have got a cake made wherever they wanted, but they wanted to fight. They wanted to force. They wanted to wield power over the Christian bakery. So they asked that that cake be baked in the Christian bakery. And that Christian baker said, no, thank you. But I didn't hear a lot of these same people, I'm almost certain, saying, well, private enterprise, they can do whatever they want. No, no, no. My suspicion is they were happy to use the power of the government to force that Christian baker to bake that cake for that gay couple. But here today, all of a sudden, they're libertarians. Free markets and free enterprise. And Facebook's a private company. Don't expect your quaint little cultural value of free speech here. No, Facebook has the delete button. But here's what they're missing. They're missing the essential ingredient in this debate. Because Hawley and I are pointing out that Facebook wasn't acting as a private company, but acting at the behest of the United States government, establishing patterns and practices, and in fact, formalizing policies, not to get information correct on their platform. They wanted to find the truth, but to censor Americans they found to be incorrect, doing away with your individual opinion. Set aside, by the way, that many of those Americans that were censored were actually the correct ones. And Facebook and the United States government, the CDC and the IH, were actually the ones perpetuating misinformation. But Facebook was acting as an agent of the United States government. It should terrify us from a cultural perspective that so many of us are willing to accept that is not only okay, but that is a virtue. It should terrify us from a political perspective that we now have politicians not just willing, but really, really interested in wielding the power of censorship and using our third biggest concern, the biggest powers outside of government to do so. Big tech is absolutely not only the biggest source and center of power in the United States of America outside of formalized government, but it is now like your Martha's Vineyard. Middle-aged woman in a fashionable hat giving double hand waves and yelling, Te amo. A fraud. They don't believe in ideas. They don't believe in free speech. They believe in being the lapdog of government. More on this story later this week. We'll dive deep with the New York Post's Miranda Devine right here on the Will Cain Podcast.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. What an exciting day in the NFL. The Miami Dolphins come back against the Baltimore Ravens. The New York Jets, two scores in under 2 minutes against the Cleveland Browns. And the Cardinals and Raiders, absolutely haywire. But of course, I was tuned in to a new day. A new dawn. Spring, if you will. The fall of Cooper Rush. The Dallas Cowboys and Cooper Rush pulled out the victory against the Cincinnati Bengals with a game-winning drive and a 50-yard field goal by Brett Maher. I went live, by the way, on Twitter yesterday. That should remain up. If you want to see real, in-the-moment reaction to that, go to my Twitter feed, at Will Cain, and you can see as I live broadcasted the end of that game. How fun. How exciting. How exciting. Cooper Rush, number one. We don't have a quarterback controversy. Get out. Don't do it. Not here for it. Dak's still the guy. And if you need validation of that, Rush put up 17 nice points in the first half, but was absolutely shut down in the second. The Dallas Cowboys defense, which was incredible, six sacks on the day. And Micah Parsons, number 11 defensive end, linebacker, best defensive player in the NFL. I mean it. Over Aaron Donald, best defensive player in the NFL. Ready for that debate. Any day, anytime. They held the Bengals. They kept Joe Burrow absolutely running for his life. But they can't be expected to keep a team under 17 points. It's modern-day NFL. Your offense has to score. And the Cowboys ground to a halt. But in the first half, it was big ones. It was steel spined. Ramrod coming out throwing. Going for it on fourth and two. Completing for 17 yards. Cooper Rush and Kellen Moore, who I'm not a big fan of anymore. Cooper Rush and Kellen Moore came out ready to play. But then they tightened up. Butt cheeks got tight, and they clinched. And they got nervous, and they played not to lose from then out. And as long as I'm here, here's the thing. I think I have more patience than the average fan, but I'm not a patient man. I am not here for any coaching staff. Maybe Mike McCarthy, but definitely Kellen Moore, that doesn't understand that your best offensive player right now, and this includes CeeDee Lamb, is Tony Pollard, the running back. It is a sin. It is coaching malpractice for him not to touch the ball 15 to 20 times a game. He's that much better than Zeke. But that's even a small fry debate. The truth is, he's a game-changing running back. He's game-changing. He's offense. He's points. And every play you don't play him, you're depriving yourself of potential points. And if you don't see that, you deserve to be fired. And if it's ownership, if it's Jerry Jones, because they paid Zeke, well, then we need to have that conversation out loud, and we're going to have mutiny in the streets, because we're not here to win if we're not willing to play Tony Pollard. Defense was awesome, and Cooper Rush came through with 1 minute to go, just enough to put him in to field goal range. Cowboys win! Cowboys win. 20-17 over Cincinnati Bengals. Better luck next time, Joe Burrow. You're going to be a great, great NFL quarterback. You just can't play it, well, on your back. Prayers up for you. Prayers up, Joe Burrow. I hope you get some help, because that defensive line was in your face all day long. We'll go through Will's weekly quarterback depth chart and another lap around the NFL on Wednesday's episode of the Will Cain Podcast. But let's just say today was a good day. This weekend was a good weekend. W's, wins, enjoy them. Enjoy them when they come at the hands of Cooper Rush. Enjoy them, as you will often in the future, when they come with the rush of Micah Parsons. Enjoy them in your kids' sports on the racquetball court. Enjoy the wins. I hope you enjoyed the Will Cain Podcast. I'll see you again on Wednesday.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.